Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of our first Clash Podders in Control of the Year. So on Monday, you wait all day for one bus and then it comes along, but it can't go below 50 miles an hour without blowing up. Typical. But today, we're not busing it. We're on board a train. Except we're not just talking about a train here, we're talking about a missile the size of the Chrysler Building from 2010. We're unstoppable.
I'm Wolf Coulson. We're working together today at train 1206.
Is there a problem?
I just don't like working at a damn daycare center.
I don't like working at a retirement home, so.
All right. This ain't training. In training, they just give you an F. Out here, you get killed.
We have an unmanned train rolling into a highly populated area with no air brakes.
Yeah.
We'll have a winner at the end of the show, but which film will it be, Speed or Unstoppable? Let's find out in today's Clash Podders in Control.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Podders. We're not just talking about a train here. We're talking about a missile the size of the Chrysler Building. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
How are you both?
Yeah, all right.
Clash Podders in Control. Second episode.
Friend request slash fan jam.
Is it just me or does it, fan jam, there's something weird about it. It feels weird to say it.
Yeah. Why would that stop us from using it?
That's a good point.
Fine, yeah. When has it ever stopped us? Sure. Very quickly, if you haven't subscribed to us, if you'd be kind enough to do that on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, it would be massively appreciated by the three of us. And if you're able to give us a little rating and review, we'd be very grateful for that. And if you do give us a review, it could be read out on the show by Chris Tilley, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly, which sounds a bit like this.
Fanuary?
Worse. Getting
that
worse.
That is worse.
Yeah.
This is...
It's a U. For some reason, that's gross.
Flanguary. This is from...
Flange.
This is from Notorious TC.
Okay.
It's been quite a few years since I found a new film podcast worth listening to. Clash of the Titles is the perfect balance of humorous tangents mixed with insightful commentary. 5 stars.
You read that a couple of weeks ago.
No, did he?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
He did! I just listened to the podcast.
Really?
Yeah, because of the name, Notorious TC.
What are you doing, Chris?
I'm going to read it next week. It's rule of three.
Did you really forget, or is there a joke happening that I don't know about?
No, I know you get paranoid that we're doing a joke on you, but we're not, because I don't recall him reading it. But
well, listen to the fucking podcast occasionally. Well, no, I'm teasing, but...
I do listen to it. Was it on the week that I wasn't on? Because I won't have heard that.
All right. I don't...
No, you're on it. Because you say thanks, Notorious TC, and you say, yeah. And I thought I was going to say it because it's such a fun name, and then I didn't say it, which is why I remembered it.
Oh, okay.
All right. Sorry, this is not interesting.
Well, but... no, but it's factual.
It is interesting how you two just... you don't believe me, definitely, even though I know I'm right.
I'm just saying nothing. I'm embarrassed, and I feel like we've wasted quite a lot of time.
All right, fine.
It all just makes it seem like we don't have more reviews than we do.
There's a bunch there.
There's loads.
They're just sitting there.
It makes it seem like you're just reading the same review until someone else gives us a review.
I just don't want to miss one. Several times.
Well, thank you again, Notorious TC.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
No, that's lovely.
Fine.
Appreciate
really nice.
It. I appreciate it.
weirdly more second time round. But I'll let you know how I feel about it next week. Right then. On Monday, Vicky took us on a breakneck tour of Speed, which means today I'm loco about a locomotive. Let me take you on a journey. Two bad train people let a massive train get away from them because they're TJ Miller and the dude from My Name is Earl. But we're not just talking about a train here, we're talking about a missile the size of the Chrysler Building. Things go from bad to worse as a horse box is destroyed and a children's field trip is ruined. Step forward, two good train people who are going to put their own lives at risk to stop this train. Sorry. This missile, the size of the Chrysler Building. Because there, Denzel Washington and Chris Pine, our heroic duo, managed to eventually stop the train while being cheered on by all the staff at Hooters. The end. Ladies and gentlemen, for your consideration, Unstoppable.
Are you saying Chris Pine's a good train person in this?
Yeah.
He's quite crap.
No, he's a good train person.
He does a lot. Yeah, doing trains. Yeah. He's really rubbish at trains. He's brave and he's good at action,
yeah.
But at trains, he's terrible.
Not crazy, yeah. And he is clear. He's like, I'm just out of training.
Yeah, I'm facing the wrong way. I've put too many carriages on.
Yeah. He literally goes backwards when he shouldn't or something. That's
or as Denzel Washington says in the film, you do that in training, you get an F.
Yeah.
Out here. You die.
You get killed, yeah. Which is news to me. I didn't know. I understand it's dangerous now, but I didn't think that at the time.
What, using trains?
Just trains. I knew that, you know, they can be dangerous, but I didn't think you'd have that sort of grizzled thing of like, out here, you die.
I don't think anyone's ever said that on a train.
No.
I think that's Hollywood license.
Filmic,
yeah. How? Poor, well.
Lots of ways.
You could, I mean, if I shot you.
If we had a big fatal fight.
While you're on the train.
Yeah. Leaves on
you
the
die.
Line.
Yeah, oh God, leaves on the line.
Wrong kind of leaves.
Wrong kind of leaves, blah, blah, yeah. Blah. All right, let me tell you a little bit about the movie. In 2004, producer Julie Yawn approached Mark Bomback, a writer, with an article about the, and I'm only going to say it once, CSX 8888. Runaway Train. So this is the true story this film is based on, also known as the sapply titled Crazy Eights Incident. So a 47-car-long train carrying thousands of gallons of toxic liquid phenol rolled out of its Ohio yard in 2001 after an engineer exited the train to align a railroad switch. He couldn't get back on board as it gained speed. Multiple attempts to derail the train failed. The chemicals on board meant potential explosions, second and third degree burns, and poisoned ecosystems. So, a northbound freight train featuring veteran engineer Jess Knowlton and a new conductor, Terry Forson, waited for the 8888 to pass. They chased the runaway locomotive down, stopped it by attaching their train, applying the dynamic brakes, while another railroad worker jumped onto the moving train and pulled its brake. So, it's pretty much all there in real life.
Wow.
It is a very, very similar to the actual events, what happens in this film with added horse box. So Mark Bomback, biggest film to this point, had been Die Hard 4.
Right.
Any love for Die Hard 4?
Is that the Simon Says script?
No, that's Die Hard
3. No, absolutely no love for Die Hard 4. No.
I've seen it and I didn't like it.
No, it's not a good film.
No.
It's the Timothy Olyphant villain one. Mm. It is apparently the script for 24, the movie, that they repurposed for Die Hard 4, hence the daughter story. Since Unstoppable, he's done Total Recall, the new one. Not a good one. The Wolverine. The second best Wolverine standalone movie.
It's not a great film.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is good, and War for the Planet of the Apes, which is great. And then I haven't seen this. Have you seen Defending Jacob, the Apple TV series? Apparently it's great.
I don't know.
He created that recently. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is he says, the stuff I wrote before Unstoppable, there's stuff I wrote before Unstoppable and there's stuff I wrote afterwards. It was the first script I wrote that I felt this is what I should be doing for a living. So he pitched the idea to 20th Century Fox, wrote a script, brought it back to them, and they said, he quotes, Tom Rothman, the head of the studio at the time, says it was his favourite script ever.
Wow.
So did he need to get the rights to this story?
I don't think you do if it's a story in the news.
I was just surprised at how closely it follows the real life story.
Yeah, well, we'll get on to that, because the two people who were involved in the actual events that I just mentioned were brought into the movie. They initially weren't going to be, but Tony Scott brings them in. But I'll tell you about that in a second. So Fox struggled to find a director initially. Robert Schwentke. He did Flight Plan and Red. He was first attached, but he couldn't get the casting right, so he left. Martin Campbell, Casino Royale, GoldenEye, etc., came on board in 2007. Couldn't find a lead actor that he liked for Barnes, Denzel Washington's character. And then there were murmurings that Tony Scott was interested. Bombach says everyone was like, he's not going to do it. He's just made a Subway movie, The Taking of Pelham 123. And then they get a call saying Tony Scott loved the script. Tony Scott says, and he describes himself as a slow reader normally, he said that he read it in one sitting and called it, it's speed on speed.
Wow.
I just flashed through it and I said, fuck. So Bombach was initially worried that Scott was going to bring some Top Gun-like machismo to the set, but then he met Scott, and Scott, at their first meeting, they met for dinner, and he'd called Knowlton and Forson, the real rail workers who were involved in the event, flown them to the dinner, and in Bombach's words, he ordered them the most expensive steaks and wine.
With a big fat cigar in his mouth.
Yeah. And from that point onwards, they were the most important people on set. Bombach says, at Tony's insistence, we included them. He drastically improved the script with all this rich detail these guys brought in, and it changed their lives. To have celebrated their heroic act in their absence would have been a tragedy. So Scott casts Denzel Washington as Barnes. Collaboration number 5. After Crimson Tide, Man on Fire, Deja Vu, The Taking Pelham 123, and now this. And then Chris Prime was just pretty hot after Star Trek. So he gets on board.
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. Critical hit. This was Scott's best reviewed film since 1995's Crimson Tide. I obviously looked at all this and I knew it already, but I just can't. It beggars belief that Man on Fire has only 38% on Rotten Tomatoes, because that film is phenomenal. And when I interviewed Denzel Washington in New York City, we were talking about all, we went through all his movies, and he said Man on Fire is his wife's favourite of his own films. Such a good film, which we are doing.
We will do it, yeah.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to do it this year sometime.
We've got an idea. Got an idea for that one.
We have.
All right, shall we go through this movie or any more for any more?
No.
No, but did you listen to that Quentin Tarantino podcast?
I know you told me to. I told you, I've been in bed all week with the flu, so no, I haven't listened to it.
Yeah, there's a 2-hour podcast.
I can't listen to podcasts in bed.
He did last year, The Rewatchables, where he was just saying he thinks this is one of the best films of the last 25 years, and he spends 2 hours discussing it, so I might pull in some of the things he said, because much as I like this, it's a big shout to say best of the century.
He's into big shouts like that, Quentin.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, interesting.
Remember when he was like, Crawl is one of the greatest movies I've seen this year.
So, yeah. Good film.
Great film.
Now, before we start, when was the first time you saw Unstoppable, Alex?
Oh, good question. I watched it at the cinema and that was it. I've seen it once. I've seen it once before. I watched it in the cinema. I think I gave it 4 stars when I was reviewing at the time. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, same-ish. Vicky?
I just watched it. I don't know why. I had lots of fun and then I forgot I'd even seen it, to be honest. And then I remembered I'd seen it.
So you were right to not do that section because we had nothing to say.
Sorry.
Moving on. No, it's not your fault. It's all about it.
So, first off, we meet Will, played by Chris Pine, who is sleeping on his brother's sofa, having had a restraining order issued against him by his wife for something. He didn't hit her, but he scared her or grabbed her. It's pretty vague, to be perfectly honest, because Denzel at one point goes, did you hit her? And he's like, define hit.
He's also a bit like, I know it's a different time, but he's like, no, I didn't hit her, I scared her. So it's like, do you want a fucking medal for that? Like, oh, you're a good guy now. And he never addresses. That's fine. Like, it's an incident. But it's this weird thing. It's like, if you're now brave, she'll forgive you. But you've definitely got anger issues.
So yeah. I mean, that whole ending, I've written it down. It does seem to be like, you can not hit your wife.
Yeah.
But
do
if
something
you
cool.
stop a train... on TV, then all's forgiven.
As the film progresses, doesn't he, you know, he's not really giving much away, but later on he does reveal everything that he's done and completely says he was in the wrong.
Yeah, but it doesn't change the fact that he has serious jealousy issues. Sure. Basically, she's on the phone to someone. He thinks it's this cop who is a friend of hers, so he threatens a cop with a gun, and I think it's the cop that gives him the restraining order, although I don't think that could be,
I don't think that's possible.
No, I don't either. But then it turns out it was her
you
sister.
You probably need a line in there at the end where it says, yes, I'm going to go to counselling, I'm going to have, you know,
because he doesn't actually say sorry. The way he says, he's like, you'll never guess who it was on the phone, it was her fucking sister. And he's not like, I'm there for a very, you know, there was no reason for me to go off like that, I shouldn't go off like that anyway. But he doesn't say, oh, I'm sorry. He's just like, I feel like an idiot because I got caught out or something.
Or you could go completely the other way. And at the end, his wife turns up, Darcy turns up and hugs him and then hugs Denzel Washington. And then Chris Pine punches Denzel Washington. Freeze frame.
Well, no, you're right. Because there's a
freeze frame on that.
You're supposed to think he's like a big guy. And his explanation is he goes around to the police officer's house and he says to the police officer, she's my wife, find a new friend. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Not allowed any male friends.
He's got problems.
It's sort of, it never, it's just, it's the one sort of black mark on this movie because I'm like, I don't, it's sort of never really resolved.
And also, I think it's meant to make you think he's either sympathetic or sort of sexy because he's got things he will go to the mat for, which is his wife not allowed to talk to anyone. It's not very good.
Anyway, it means that he can only now watch his son board the school bus from afar like a creepoid. But it turns out he's got his job on the railroad because of nepotism and because they can pay him less because they're paying, getting rid of the older workers who they have to pay more, who've been there 20 years. And that's why Barnes isn't too friendly to Will when they meet, because he's seen too many of his good buddy old timers fired to get these cheaper young guys in. So we got our duo and we got a nice bit of conflict there for them to talk about on the train, so that's nice.
It's all very economical here, I think, in terms of establishing the characters and getting going.
But we need a villain. Say hello to Locomotive 777, who is introduced by the Rail Network's very own Chuckle Brothers, Dewey and Gillespie. Dewey and Gillespie. Oh, they're a double act waiting for their big break.
They're good, aren't they?
They're so good together. So through a mixture of not attaching the air brakes, misaligning the throttle and a comedy pratfall when they're chasing an empty train, they let the beast loose. Although initially, people think it's fine. People are laughing because they think the train's only going to be travelling at 10 miles an hour and they can totally catch it up. But before we find out that that's not the case, we meet Ned, played by Lou Chapman, a cowboy who works on the railways and drives a truck with the license plate Ned One.
Spoiler alert, is this everyone's MVW?
Oh my God, he's so fucking brilliant.
Isn't he amazing? I literally wrote down.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he nicks the whole thing.
A well-drawn character as well. He's such a well-drawn character because, like, immediately from the conversation with the waitress to him jumping in the truck to the way he talks on the phone, like, traffic, I'll be there in 6 minutes, traffic contingent.
Yeah.
And you're like, he's that security guard who wears all his keys on his belt and has a holster for his mobile phone. It's someone who just genuinely thinks they are hot shit at their job, but regardless of what the job
is. But he makes you believe he is hot shit. That's such a well-known character, and it's this little bit David Brent that it's like, you're faintly, well, more than faintly, but you're ridiculous for being like, sorry, lead welder. When he says it, you're like, oh, wow.
Well,
okay.
No, I think I'm the opposite. I didn't believe he was good at his job, but then he proves you wrong by being brilliant, I think. I thought, well, this is a guy just talking shit.
Yeah.
And then, but no, we took different things from it. But then, so I'm even more pleasantly surprised. Oh my God, he's better than he's even saying he is.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, what the best small characters in movies are the ones where you can imagine an entire film about them.
Yeah.
And he's one where I could happily have watched his story for 2 hours.
Well, then you'll be unhappy with this next fact, because I think you can agree. He gets quite a big intro for someone who then disappears for large portions of the movie. So Chapman's role in Unstoppable had been bigger on the page, but due to scheduling constraints, some scenes were cut, but Chapman didn't mind because Tony said, I know this wasn't the role you signed on for, but I appreciate you being so professional about it, and that's why I'm not going to forget you. That's all it took. I always respected that.
It's fine though, you can have too much of a good thing. Just come in and steal the movie in two or three scenes.
Yeah.
Job done.
I don't know. I could have done with more of him. I miss him when he's not on.
Yeah, and there's a moment later where Rosario Dawson seems annoyed that he's popped back up, whereas it's not her fault, but it's like her character's out of step with the audience because she's like, is Ned still around? And you're like, yay, Ned's coming back. But she just seems a bit disgruntled back because he seems like a comedy character.
Mm.
So
he's so good. Bonds and Will are bickering away on the train while over with engine 777. Helicopters are now flying over it. I could literally watch helicopters flying close to this train for 2 hours.
Right.
It looks so good. And it's because they're real and the train's real. Mm. Actual helicopters, actual train. Scott said he did toy with doing a lot with CGI and then thought, no, because this needs to feel real. You need to feel like you're on this train.
Astonishingly well directed.
It's amazing.
It's so good.
I mean, he always shot with a lot of cameras, but like, because they'd often do just one take of a scene, because like the scale was so big, like he had like 15 cameras shooting at any one time.
Yeah.
And his editor I think his editor had quite a hard time on Domino because it was just like, that was so fast cut.
Mm.
And Tarantino was saying that this is completely the opposite of how he shoots. He shoots with one or two cameras, Tarantino, and there's nothing that's shot that he hasn't planned and is going to go in the film. Whereas Tony is putting cameras everywhere in with the knowledge that something's going to come out of this. Something good from one angle that I'm maybe not expecting. So that's quite interesting, the difference between the two of them.
And it's the motion as well. I think Tony Scott talked about how you can have quite a static scene that looks like shit tons is going on in the scene because the cameras are always in motion.
Well, he does that in the command centre thing. That's basically a call centre with Rosario Dawson stood in front of a big telly. But the way that everything sweeps around, it looks like the most kinetic, dynamic thing possible, even though no one's even moving. It's amazing.
The camera never stops moving in Domino. And I find that film almost impossible to watch, the Tony Scott, Richard Kelly movie. And yet it's the same here. It's in that opening scene it's happening. And I was thinking, oh, no, we've got another Domino. But it's that combination of the movement matching the storyline and the theme. But also he's using these different film and cameras and filters and stock. And so not only is the camera on the move, but the image is on the move as well. And so it all combines to make the action so much more exciting than, say, I would say a Michael Bay film.
Yeah.
Because with Tony Scott, I always know physically and geographically where I am.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Michael Bay ones of recent years, I'm just confused and my brain switches off.
I agree.
I also think, fundamentally, you've got a train travelling along a straight track, which isn't that dynamic a thing. But because of all the motion of the cameras around it, it suddenly transforms it into this like, oh, my God, what could happen? It's going to go down the track. But what could happen?
And with the combination of the news as well, it really feels like it's happening in real time, which is helpful.
Mm. We find out this train is full of molten fennel.
This is a funny bit, but they're like, what is molten fennel?
Yeah, and that
only
dude.
There was a computer that we... Because I was like, what year is... It's 2010.
Oh, yeah.
Ask the fucking computer. They're like, guy, what is this stuff? And he's like, well, take my word for it. Well, we don't have to, do I? Because of Google.
It is toxic and very combustible. Which means Connie, Rosario Dawson's character, gets to say what is clearly my favourite line from the movie. We're not just talking about a train here. We're talking about a missile
the size
of the Chrysler building. To which someone should go, the Chrysler building, God, is that bigger or smaller than the Empire State Building? Because I know that one is big, but the Chrysler building, it's definitely still big. But is it bigger than the Empire State Building? Fingers on buzzers. It's just a weird... I mean, I know when they picked it, because it's a big building with a recognisable name and it flows off the tongue. We're talking about a missile the size of the Empire State Building.
Yep.
It's too much.
It's too much.
So, let's meet the business side of the rail network. Mr. Galvin, played by the brilliant Kevin Dunn, who appears on screen wearing a T-shirt saying, I'm a corporate arsehole.
Yeah, this is the thing. Why are the suits? They're never right, are they? How do they get to do their job? Like, I don't know what it was like in real life, the real story, but obviously it's like these blue-collar guys versus corporate America. And there's a class war going on and there's some sexism because, like, Connie knows what's going on, but the men won't listen. It's like, just chuck it all in. But these suits, they never, never know. It's baffling that they've got to that position of power.
And if it wasn't clear enough that these dudes are money men, then Mr. Galvin has a conversation with his boss, who doesn't stop playing golf during the crisis and answers the phone with, "Hi, I'm an even bigger corporate arsehole."
Yeah. My dad would be the same, though. You wouldn't want to ruin a good round. Not if you can do it at the same time.
Do you play golf?
No, my dad and my brother.
I really want to. Genuinely, it's like
it's time for you.
I can play golf. I can play golf. Maybe come out for a round with me and Ted Tilly.
Okay, yeah, that'd be nice.
Do that. Come down to his club.
Didn't expect that to happen on this episode.
Oh, and he's always looking for new people to play.
I do what I do. I mean, I've never played.
To play against.
Oh yeah, for high stakes.
Yeah.
Does he send you out? Bring me some new flesh. Bring me some new flesh, Christopher. Someone I can trounce. Does your dad say trounce? I imagine he does. That's a great word. Okay. So, before you get bored of people talking in this movie, more cameras whizzing round trains and helicopters flying dangerously close to the train. Honestly, whenever you think this film's going to dip, bang, helicopter, train, cameras moving.
And because they're using news reports, it means that when something cool happens, the film can replay it two or three times. Right, and so you get several bites of the cherry to build the panic.
Yeah. And also, the other good thing that they do to make this more exciting is they make the train roar. It's like got its own voice. It's like...
True.
Yeah, that's what Tarantino was saying. This is a monster movie. This is a Godzilla film.
Yeah, it is. It reminds me of The Truck and Duel. Specifically where it goes over the cliff at the end and it actually roars like a dying monster. It's like...
Yeah, they used animal roars, didn't they, for that?
It's the T-Rex roar from 1 million years BC slowed down, and Spielberg used it at the end of Jaws when the truck goes over the cliff. He uses it again when the shark's carcass sinks to the bottom of the ocean in Jaws.
Oh,
it's
nice.
The same sound effect. Alex trivia this, right?
I know a couple of lads who are just finishing up a feature documentary about Jaws.
Really?
Yeah, if we want to do that sometime, maybe we'll get them on.
I haven't seen that movie in years, but as a kid, I must have watched it like 20 times. I was obsessed with Jaws. I thought it was great. So we get our first big action set piece. We've already seen this train destroy a horse box, which is cool. But this is the first attempted stopping of the train by the corporate assholes. So they try and lower a former Marine turned railroad worker onto the train. Shit goes wrong. He hits a windscreen, goes limp, and looks pretty much dead. Which is why it's weird that the guy in the call center goes, "That's a no-go."
Yeah, it seems like, really cold.
Yeah, like,
little broken body just dangling around. That didn't work.
I mean, dude, sometimes saying like something cool isn't always the right thing. You know,
a bit of respect.
Reference it first and goes, "Oh my God, I hope he's okay." Also, that's a no-go for the landing him on the train plan.
And also, we're never going to try it again. Oh, why not? Just not. Just not going to try that again.
And then Judd, who's driving the train trying to stop the 77, he gets derailed and dies. But that's okay in movie logic because he was a bit of a dick to Chris Pine at the start. So he can die.
Yeah.
But it raises the stakes, doesn't it? Because he's a friend of Denzel's.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we learn that Denzel... obviously has lost his job, and so he's really got no reason to be loyal and do this, and now he knows that he could die because his mate's just died. It makes it all the more impressive, the decision that he takes.
For this derailment sequence, there's a reason I'm telling you this. So they built functional trains from scratch that weighed 25,000 pounds each. They had pressurized cylinders inside that would shove down at the push of a button and flip the train on its side. So Joe Pancake, the film's stunt coordinator, said he knew that this derailment scene was going to be an "oh shit" moment. And now are you ready for the Joe Pancake quote that sounds like every meeting we have after this show in the pub?
Yeah.
He says, "When you draw it up on the bar on a napkin, it's like, yeah, we can do that." Then you sober up the next day and go, "What the hell?"
Yeah. A few of the live show ideas that seem very good at 11:30 in the pub. No, that's a good shout.
It was the first derailment of its kind, shot in a live action movie in one take. When Judd dies, though, as Scott does cut to Dewey's face, the guy who let the train escape at the start, and it's just a really good moment because he didn't say anything, but you can see, like, on his face, like the actual, the now very real world cost of what he's
done.
That
was my fault. Yeah.
I feel like in American cinema and TV, I feel like Dewey is shorthand for stupid. Yeah. Is it not that name?
Yeah. What's the famous one? Dewey. Oh, it's Louis. Scream. Dewey.
The exactly. Stupid. Yeah. Dopey. Yeah. Speaking of names, Joe Pancake. Did you do any research into him?
I was just, it was enough. I was like, Joe Pancake, you're going in my script.
I'm looking up. He is a big deal, isn't
he? Is.
He's got a BFI page. Mm. But what a name.
Mm. I mean, you know, it's sort of like if you flipping a train on its side and you don't want anyone to get squashed. Who's in charge? Joe Pancake. Right then, let's take a quick break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, we're back. Now Barnes and Will are chasing 777. The hunter has become the hunted. I don't know why. When I wrote that line in the script, I was just like, that's stupid.
But you like it.
I like it.
Yeah, you can have it.
Thanks very much. There is a script for the show. So they're putting their lives at risk to stop this train, which gives us a wonderful bit of writing. I really like this moment where Mr. Galvin doesn't want them to do this and is huffing and puffing and says, "You do this and you're fired." And Barnes gets to go, "You already fired me."
Yeah, that's nice.
It's good, isn't it?
It's very good.
Then he just keeps threatening to fire everyone. And that doesn't quite work. He should be like, "You're not just fired. I'll see you in court," or blah, blah, blah.
So, yeah, he's had to take forced early retirement with half benefits. So he's going to do it, though. But it's up to Will. Will's in the carriage with him in the driver's cabin. So, Will, is he going to disobey his corporate paymasters? What killer line is Will going to deliver to tell us that he is going to do what he wants and he's going to stop this train? What's the line? Over to you, Will. I'm letting you know, we're going to run this bitch down.
I curled up for him because he is brilliant. You know, it's that sort of film where it's like, I'm going to give this line. But this train gets called a bitch quite a lot, which is odd.
Well, that's more a ship, isn't it? You should call a ship a bitch.
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely, because they are total bitches.
But trains?
Well, it's quite confused, to be perfectly honest. So we're going to run this bitch down. So 777 is a bitch at this point.
Bitch.
However, in a literally the next scene, Mr. Galvin is talking about how the mobile derailer they're using He says, the son of a bitch won't even know what hit him. Yep. People seem very confused about the gender of this runaway train, which is no wonder it's running away.
Yeah, they do, like the ship, they say, give her everything, like whatever, the throttle or something. Mm. So the train is her, but then the train is the son of a bitch, so
would it be better if he said we're going to run this twat down?
It would be unexpected, so therefore good.
We're going to run this minge down.
Whoa!
I'm just saying, all the different things. I only followed the pattern that was already happening in the studio. We went from bitch to twat to minge. That's the rule.
Wowzers. Great.
No,
it's fine. I'm fine. I'm just shocked. That's all. I don't say that very often.
Starting the year as we meet together.
So we get a bit of backstory for Barnes. His wife died of cancer.
Fridged. Sorry, she was.
So, as I've repeatedly said, on other episodes, it's reaction shots of people watching action that makes action really ping.
Okay.
I really think when you see something happening and you're the audience and you're like, that looks cool. But then when you see other people going, oh, my God, then it doubles down on your emotion already and makes it even more exciting. And it works even better when those shots are from loved ones watching our heroes be heroic.
In Hooters.
In Hooters! Lads.
We've never been to Hooters together. I think we should sort that out.
Have you been to Hooters?
I've been to a Hooters, yeah.
I think I
Which
did.
One in Nottingham?
It was... Oh, really?
Oh, Jesus. Sorry.
Sorry, I don't... That sound... this is bad, because I just did the same thing. Like, why... There's nothing wrong with it being in Nottingham. I went to one in Los Angeles. No, was it LA or Toronto? No, it's Toronto I went to one in.
Mm-hmm.
No, Vancouver.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
I do think it's funny. This is right at the beginning of the film, and they're trying to get to know each other, Will and Barnes. And Will says, oh, tell me about your daughters. He's like, well, you know, they're paying their way through college by working as a waitress. And he goes, where? Hooters. I meant the college. Like, if someone says where, he's like, where do they go to school? I don't give a shit where they waitress. Why would anyone
and
care? Their
reaction. He say, at that point, he goes, I'm a fan.
Yeah,
their reactions. Their reactions, I think, are very funny. And I think it's some very good acting.
Hooters, weirdly, I went down a rabbit hole on Hooters, not actually doing as well as it once did.
Really?
Surprisingly.
I wonder why that could be.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, and it's not the answer you might think.
No, I'm interested. Really? Is it rent rather than changing politics?
Well, obviously it's the changing politics is one, people
Chicken
protesting.
Wings are now really expensive.
We've just done Coyote Ugly, so...
Yeah.
There's not a huge amount of difference.
No. It's partially because of obviously the changing world. It's also because their menu is now not what millennials like. Mm-hmm. It's a very old school menu. Here's the weird one. There was a survey done in conjunction with our sponsor, Pornhub. And this is going to blow your mind. Breasts are not one of the major searches that goes into Pornhub.
I wondered why you went to Minge so quickly.
So it turns out, like, the appetites of men are, it's no longer looking at
boobies.
At boobies in a restaurant.
I don't know where this is going.
That was it. That's my fact. That's one of the reasons why Hooters is going downhill.
Because it's too tame?
But they serve breasts, don't they? Chicken is the main thing, I think, in Hooters.
I don't know that I ate there.
I think it's a chicken wings place, basically.
And you have to eat there. Yes, it is a chicken wings place, yeah. Yeah. I didn't go on Pornhub.
What? Don't fucking lie.
No one asked.
Vicky suggested that I'd said Minge because I'd been on Pornhub recently.
Which is true.
I read a survey that quoted Pornhub. And then I had to check what Pornhub was. I've never heard of it before.
What is this?
Yes. Just another interesting Hooters story. They were sued by two men who tried to get jobs there and were turned away.
Mm-hmm.
And they sued Hooters for discrimination.
Yep.
And
they lost.
Hooters settled out of court, but they weren't then forced to employ men as servers based on this quite disturbing argument. They claimed they weren't hiring waitresses, they were hiring entertainers who didn't interview as much as, in their words, audition.
Yeah, didn't they keep an eye on people's measurements? They got in trouble for that, for the waitresses, in case they put on weight, then you were in danger of losing your job.
Well, it's that Abercrombie and Fitch story, I think. I told you before, where they have different tiers of staff, and if you're really beautiful, you're allowed to be on the floor and talk to customers. If you're second tier level beautiful, you're allowed to be on the floor, but you cannot speak to customers. And if you're not beautiful enough, you work behind the scenes.
Which they take the piss out of that, don't they, in Neighbours, in Bad Neighbours, when it's Zac Efron and Seth Rogen shirtless outside Abercrombie and Fitch.
That's funny.
Anyway, Denzel's daughters are watching Dad on the screen while Dad is saying things to the corporate suits like, "Not for you. I'm not doing it for you." That is why you pay Denzel Washington $20 million for this movie.
Because also the bit with the when he's with Chris Pine at the beginning, is there anyone better at passive aggression than Denzel Washington? I don't think so. Like, he's like, no, we're cool, we're cool. I hate you. No, everything's fine.
Yeah. And also, but I mean, just to use that example, is there anyone better than Denzel Washington as being an everyman and saying profound things in an everyman voice to corporate arseholes? He's so good. He's so good in this movie. Meanwhile, Darcy, Will's wife, who he definitely didn't hit, is watching going, "Come on, baby," as he gets blasted in the face by loads of grain. Do you know what that grain actually was that they used in the movie? You know when he tries to attach the air brakes?
Porridge. Was it... stones. Was it fluff?
Again, I think I said on the last episode or 2 weeks ago, you can say you don't know. You don't.
Of all the things that you've said
popcorn.
To me in our lives, that's actually a really... I've tried to take that on board because it's clearly a really not. Good idea. Sorry, I just forgot.
When? For the
last 30 seconds?
Yeah, last week.
Popcorn.
No, Rice Krispies.
Really?
Oh, I was close.
You were close.
Because
I'm looking at popcorn on the screen.
Rice Krispies. But like I said earlier, lesson for us all, menace your partner, get a restraining order. Easiest way to get back in their good backs is reattach some air brakes to a train while being blasted with Rice Krispies. There is a red letter day. So Will gets his moment. Now it's Denzel's turn, leaping from car to car.
Oh, so, do you know, when I saw that moment, because it's like, oh, Chris Pine's had a pop, now Denzel's going to get a go. Is that a casting thing? It's like they both want a shot at the hero, or did that really happen? So the heroism was shared kind of thing.
It isn't reported exactly in detail in the real story. I mean, clearly in the movie, it's so they both get their hero moment, so they both equally do it.
The thing is, Darcy as well, when they go to the curve, she's taken her son down to the curve to watch his dad die, potentially, because it might not definitely work. And then at the
end... You would want to see that, though. I mean,
it's going to happen.
It's a proper rubbernecking thing. It's like a train. Are we far enough away to not get hurt? Cool, I want to see it. You know when you sort of be a bit like, fuck, it didn't come off the tracks.
And also at the end, when she's giving him a hug, he now can go to prison because he's broken the terms of the restraining order because he's within 30 feet of her. So that's problematic for him.
Yeah. So Denzel, actually, I couldn't work this out. I'm going to read you the quote. So that's him apparently leaping from train car to train car on top of the train. This is the quote. When he was asked about doing his own stunt in that moment, he said, "Being an idiot is what compelled me to do my own stunts. I think the audiences know when it's green screen, when it's fake, and they can relax. Every time you see me on top of a train, that's really me. We had a stuntman who did most of it, but I had to do it as well."
Okay, when the trains were static.
I mean... Apparently, both of them did 75% of their own stunts in the film. I don't know how you worked that out. I wondered if it's like, so Denzel, you're going to walk these 3 metres and then the stuntman's going to do that quite dangerous 1 metre jump.
Yeah.
And Denzel goes, so I've done 75% of this stunt then. Well, the jump's the stunt, but I've walked the 3 metres. So that's 75%. Thanks going on the CV. So we're getting to the climax now. That sounded like I was climaxing. Getting to the climax now. First of all, the brakes on the train blow. And for some reason, they give that observation to a newscaster who seemingly knows a shit ton about trains because he goes, looks like the brakes have blown. It's like, Jim, okay, fine. Then Cowboy Ned turns up again and drives Will to the cabin and encourages him to jump from a moving vehicle onto a moving train with the words, "Do it, you pussy."
Brilliant. I like it.
Come on, Ned.
Nope, perfect.
He's got a bad foot. Don't call him that. He's just been so brave.
Visually, though, this climax, as well as the drama, is everything for me. Train, pickup, helicopters, emergency vehicles, all shot by Tony Scott. It's incredible.
Yep.
It just looks great. It's so hard to believe that a movie about a train is
going
this
in a
exciting.
Straight line. Yeah.
So they stop the train. Cut to Mr. Galvin, for some reason, livid that their plan worked and saved the company loads of money and embarrassment. Connie gives Barnes a kiss, which, knowing that his wife is dead, might suggest something might happen there.
It was, wasn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. I read that. First time I watched it, didn't see it. Second time, I was like, I think they're saying there's another future. Mm. Do you not think?
I did.
Maybe.
I think. I mean, I don't know, but I maybe it's...
Cause, no, it wasn't the kiss. It's that she says... good daughters. So it's like, oh, now you're their mum.
Part of the family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we get our epilogue. Frank retired with full benefits. Oscar Galvin is replaced. Dewey now works in the fast food industry. And Will never hit his wife again. The
Definitely.
End. actually, lot. Any more for any more?
No.
All right, let's do the bits then. Chris, best scene.
I lost my shit at one moment in this film, and it's when they talked about lifting the flange.
Wow, okay.
Because the derailment can happen by lifting the flange. I've replayed it about three times. That's what they said. So I Googled flange, and a flange refers to the projecting edge or rim on the circumference of a steel wheel that is designed to keep the wheel on a rail.
Did you not know that?
Everyone knows that.
But no, now that's why I called it flangeberry.
Okay.
We're in the right month.
Okay. Do you want to?
I don't, I can't.
No. All right. What's your best scene then?
The thing you just talked about, which is...
You're so raven right now.
The jump, because Ned's turned back up, and I love Ned, so driving Chris Pine down the parallel road very fast to jump onto the pickup, to jump off the pickup, that's the best bit.
That's great. It's great. I've just written, any scene with helicopters, emergency vehicles and the train all moving at high speed, dangerously close to each other, shot by Tony Scott.
Yeah.
Any of them.
Yeah, and there's a lot.
There's a lot, and it thrills me. MVW, Vicky.
Ned.
Okay.
Yep, sorry. It should be Denzel, obviously, because it tends to be whenever he turns up, but it just isn't. Ned steals the whole thing. I like him. I couldn't put my finger on why I like him so much, because he's not my sort of bloke, but I just was like, he just would make you feel really safe. Like, if he said he could do something, he can do it.
Do you not think he'd be annoying? Like, that waitress at the start,
she
when he's...
She hates him, yeah.
Yeah, because he's rabbiting on about, like, his job to her.
Yeah.
I mean, could you listen to someone...
I can't be with anyone. I can't be with anyone. I can't be near anyone that talks more than I do.
Right.
Obviously.
I don't think you and Ned would make a good couple.
No. If I can't hear my own voice, I'd say for like 35 seconds, I start to panic. I think I'm dead.
Have I died? Oh no, it's me. I'm back. Chris, your MVW.
Sorry, I should have said flange also means something else in British slang. I don't think I was clear on that.
What does it mean?
He wants to say
he
fanny
doesn't
flaps.
Know. I actually don't think I know.
Okay, so that's why you looked at me so quizzically.
Right, okay,
it's a rude, it's a quite a rude term.
Fine.
Check it on your Pornhub. So
it's not my Pornhub. It's everyone's Pornhub.
So, I mean, it would be ridiculous not to give Tony Scott a shout out.
Mm-hmm.
This is maybe the greatest Tony Scott film.
Yep.
Apart from the other ones I like more. But I'm going with Lou Temple, who plays Ned, because I think that character...
Is it Lou Temple? Oh, I think I called him Lou Chapman earlier. My mistake.
I think that character on the page isn't particularly good. I think that guy is the person who delivers and injects all that personality into him. Mm. So, yeah, I'm going for Lou Temple.
It's a tough one. It's one of two for me. It's either Denzel Washington, because he brings premium Denzel wholesomeness to this, or Tony Scott for somehow making a train moving along a track in a straight line the most exciting thing in the world. And so in the end, I have decided to give it to both of them, because as a team, they are incredible. Every one of their five movies is brilliant, apart from Deja Vu.
I didn't mind it.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't love it, but it's all the right ingredients.
I just remember being really confused by it. Like,
yeah,
I was,
by the end,
I think the bit where isn't he wearing some special sunglasses or something to see the future and avoiding traffic in the future, but in the present day, I was like, oh, this is,
all
this
set
is
up.
Not.
All set up, no payoff.
Yeah. Mm.
So no, apart from Deja Vu, they are unstoppable together. Change. Chris.
Chris Pine should say, we're going to run this squirrel cover down. My real one is, while Chris Pine is punching Denzel Washington at the ceremony, I think we should, in the background, we should see Dewey taking a passenger train hostage because he wants his job back, therefore kicking off Unstoppable 2.
Victoria?
So this is it's a silly change because obviously you've got to, I suppose you've got to stick with how it happened in real life. But if it was purely fictional, when Will Coulson jumps onto the train, all he is in that moment is he's brave. He's not necessarily a train worker. He's just a brave man in the right place at the right time. Mm. So there needs to be something super blue collar that he knows that gets him onto the train. Like, he leaps onto it at a certain point and the shirts are like, you cannot get on the train at that point because he knows this is not the thing. I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but like a secret door. Shut up. There's a fucking escape hatch in Speed.
I didn't say a fucking word.
Oh, they're fine. Because it's a podcast. People can't see your face, but fine. So he just has to do something that is a thing that only they know, the blue collar train workers.
Right.
So that you, otherwise he's just a brave dude, isn't he? At that point.
Like a secret door.
Like a secret door. Yeah. Or I thought maybe like a lever. Oh, what else did I think? Wait, it will come to me. No, it hasn't.
I can't wait to read your next script. Things are flying. Secret a ladder that a ladder made out of berries,
and then Raven and Crow.
Yeah, and they're hot together because they're both adjacent to darkness.
Yeah, Traven.
Eric Draven.
Thank you.
That's what it is.
Of course.
Yeah, there you go again. Oh, of course, the crow. Yeah. My changes are, I really think you should go all in. It shouldn't be Hooters. It should be a lap dancing bar.
Fucking hell.
Why not?
It would have been if this film was made in the 80s and Joel Silver was producing.
100%. Right.
So there you go. That's my
change. Shane Black writing, Joel Silver producing. That's what you're getting.
These are my daughters. I'm a fan.
Sorry, I was going to say something horrible. Let's keep going.
Okay. Well, that's it then.
Good.
Should we do the verdict?
Yes.
So, Alex, do you want to... You say this bit, don't you, sometimes?
I got confused.
Should we do the verdict?
No, let's do the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth. All right. Let me think. Who do I think's voting for what? I think I know. Alex, you go first.
Okay. I'm going to say this up top. Genuinely, in the history of this show, this has been one of the toughest choices for me. I found it really, really difficult. And unfortunately, I am going to prefix my decision by saying I'm not a huge fan of my reasoning for this verdict.
Oh, excellent.
So Speed is a stone-cold action classic. Although, as I said on Monday, I think the ending lets it down. It needed to end with the bus exploding. That said, I freaking love it. Unstoppable has Tony Scott doing the best Tony Scott work, and I love Tony Scott, especially paired with Denzel. It is not, however, the action classic Speed is, but, and here's my situation, I've killed Speed. I've watched it too many times. It's lost its effect on me. I didn't get the emotional hits that I usually get from it. And for that reason, I enjoyed Unstoppable a lot more. And so Unstoppable is my winner this week.
Wow. Okay, so it's now whichever film you've watched the least is
no, because I can. I know it sounds like weak reasoning, but I genuinely got thrills watching Unstoppable and Speed. Yeah, it is that.
So it's Unstoppable.
It's Unstoppable.
Are you sure you're not changing your mind?
I'm not going to change my mind.
Okay.
Hang on. No, I'm going Unstoppable this week.
I'm going to jump in now then. I think Speed walks a fine line, as it's very nearly a spoof watching it this time. But in spite of Quentin Tarantino's claims, I think it's much more memorable and engaging. Also, I believe these movies live and die by their villain, and Dennis Hopper is the dog's bollocks in Speed.
Because he's better than a train.
Yeah, I mean, literally, I think he's better than a train.
Wow. A man is better than
God, a train. God, is that his epitaph? Dennis Hopper, a better villain than a train.
So Good as Unstoppable is, Speed is the one I'll be watching again, so that gets my vote.
Okay, it's
Jeopardy!
Yay! Because this was really hard.
Right, wasn't
really,
it?
Really, really, really hard. Speed is Speed. You can't fuck with Speed, obviously. Mm. Unstoppable is more exciting, though. Like, Speed, as everyone says, is there's a large portion of it where Sandra Bullock is driving in circles. I mean, so that's the thing. And the way that, I mean, Jan Zabont is an amazing director, but the way that Unstoppable is directed, it's just, it just blows your head off, and it never stops and all of that. But Speed is lots more fun because this blue collar thing does get a little bit grating after a while. Like, there's sort of like, there's a lot of like politics run into it, which is all cool. But just when you're comparing it to Speed, Speed is just like pure fun. However, in Unstoppable, I'm such a sucker for this. You learn new things about trains. So I know,
like,
don't
levers
laugh.
And
yeah,
secret
but you,
doors.
No, but you honestly do. And I love a script that's like, I'm not going to hold your hand too much, but I will teach you something new that you may not have any interest in. I do not know how to drive a train, but you feel like you're like, oh, dynamic braking or whatever. They don't tell you what that is particularly, but you're just told this thing will work.
And the flange.
And the flange. They don't say flange, do they? No.
We've just discussed the fact they mentioned the flange in it.
Do they say the word flange?
Yes, that's why I talked about it.
Sorry. Anyway. So
because she wasn't talking, it's like you think when she's not talking, she's listening. She's not. She's talking in her head and working out what she's going to say next.
Like everybody in this room.
Yeah,
don't give me that.
Sorry.
So anyway, listen. So then, obviously, it comes down to Sandra, who is my favourite woman, but. I watched Unstoppable yesterday and I watched it on a train. And so my experience was a little bit overwhelming. And I want to do my reasoning. I think I want to go with my brain and not my heart. Sandra is in my heart, but in my brain, I know which film I enjoyed more and would watch again. And I would only be giving it to Speed for the sort of legacy thing. I think Unstoppable is better. So even though Sandy's in it, because you need to know, I won't just always blindly pick something with Sandra in it, and she's awesome in it, but Unstoppable just is more fun.
Wow.
Really.
That's big.
That is as big. Sometimes when we make big claims, I'm like, have we shot ourselves in the foot? But actually, I think this is a fair fight.
I get it. Yep. It may well be a better film.
Okay.
It's just not my preferred, but no, great. Quentin Tarantino will be very happy.
Good. And that's what this is all about.
Hey, Quentin, thanks for listening. So there we have a winner. Unstoppable is the winner of our first Clash Podders in Control. It continues, though. Next week, another Clash Podders in Control with another listener pick. V, what was the clue that you gave us on Monday and what are the films?
So the clue was, but I like The Forbidden Fruit, which means you, Alex, are watching The Social Network and Chris is watching Steve Jobs.
Woohoo!
I don't know where they are because I didn't look.
Chris?
I did look
and I forgot. They're both on Amazon. I think on
Steve
Amazon
Steve Jobs was... They were both on Netflix for ages, so they might still be there.
Okay.
I don't know.
Useful. I remember once looking at Netflix and thinking, oh, look, The Social Network's on there. Could have been any time in the last 4 years, yeah. But they could still be there.
Last time I saw it was about 3 years ago. It was from Netflix. So.
Steve Jobs is on Prime Video.
Excellent.
And
The Social Network is available to rent on Prime Video.
And what about to buy?
It's just that new thing.
All right, great. Are you done? I feel like you're looking like you're about to add more information, so I'm unwilling to start the end.
No, go. I'll buy it.
Okay, so that is your homework for the weekend. We'll be announcing who the listener was that picked those films on the next episode, but it is The Social Network versus Steve Jobs. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. If you butt in now, I will be angry. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. We are back on Monday talking The Social Network. Have a great weekend.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.